This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Mark Hawthorne, who is the Victorian publisher of The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald and the Australian Financial Review, he's off to the Gigi's today.
I am.
What's the race? What race day is it?
So today's Derby Days. For those of us in the community who love horses, this is like the fairy tale day. I think there's four Group 1 races.
Do you consider horse racing gambling?
It's an unusual thing. It is a sport that fundamentally exists for gambling, which makes it quite unusual. But yeah, without the gambling facet of it, absolutely is core. And anyone who says they're just there because to see horses race and the thrill of it, they're in a very small minority.
Mind you, I do think a lot of people go there for the cultural aspects and the social aspects.
Oh, absolutely. And the fashion aspects.
In fact, to be really perfectly honest, I don't know many people who've been there because they've been acutely interested in horse racing.
There's a joke in the birdcage that it's called the birdcage because everyone looks inward than outward.
That's right.
And
nobody actually sees the race.
I've actually heard the joke on some of those balconies. Are there horses running here today?
And in fact, one of the balconies is faces away from the track.
Many of them do.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting watching the crowd. First off, I wanted to. We're going to talk about our news story in a sec, but
which I'm not across, by the way. I've been on public transport on my way in. Have you broken a story?
We haven't. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, really?
We've been waiting for you. Do you want? Should we start?
It's not about us, is it?
No. It's actually a bit of a franchise dispute. And I'll let Tass lead off, but it's about the Less Than United Church.
Let me give you a little bit of background, Macca and Mark. So early this year, the National Assembly of the Uniting Church got together and unanimously agreed that they would allow those ministers who wish to conduct a same-sex marriage to do so.
Mm-hmm. And it was widely reported at the time?
Absolutely. We had the moderator, the national moderator here in the studio, Sharon Hollis. She gave us a fabulous interview. It was very generous and it was
on our podcast.
Positive. And we had a fantastic response. Now, what's occurring is that there are a number of their members who are not happy about this. And according to their constitution, if you reach a certain number, and the number is actually quite small and not difficult to achieve as I can see it, you can actually trigger another debate. What in fact has occurred is that the Secretary of the Uniting Church of Australia, Colleen Geyer, so she's the Assembly General Secretary, has written to every single minister of the Uniting Church and told them about this, and said the D-Day for this decision is early in November. I don't know the exact date, but early in November. Should this occur, all same-sex marriages will be paused. No more marriages till the Assembly gets back together again, has another discussion, and they can achieve three outcomes. And the outcomes are to either endorse the current position, to revoke the current position, or to amend the current position.
So let's get this straight. So they had a meeting of their synod.
Correct.
Spelt S-Y-N.
Well, it's called an assembly, actually.
An assembly. Sorry, it's the synod.
The language is very different in the UC.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a different franchise.
Yeah, the Archbishop's called the moderator.
Yeah. Well, they're not very So basically,
I'm just curious as what has ascendancy, the Constitution or the Bible?
Mark.
It's very good.
How many champagnes have you had already?
None. So,
whoa.
So the assembly agreed.
Correct.
So now a number of parishes.
Correct.
Have petitioned the assembly.
Correct.
And once they get a certain number, they can then revisit this decision.
Absolutely.
Do we know what that number is?
Look, it's a little bit too complicated for my tiny brain, but I understand.
Is it like New Testament and Old Testament?
I understand. I understand it's about 9.
Oh, is that all?
Okay,
is that
it's
all?
Not a loss. And the complaints are actually coming from far north Queensland and far north New South Wales. I understand that the profile of those parishes is older, white, possibly more on the right side of politics.
And finding 9 such people is not going to be difficult.
No.
Well, it's 9 parishes.
Yeah, but you only... It
of
just
course.
Needs to be...
Oh, 9 parishes, not
yep.
9 individuals.
Yeah.
Yep. Parishes. Yep. Okay.
So yep. it's not that
yep.
difficult.
Yep. Yep.
So,
watch this space is what I'm going
to
say.
But this is going to be affecting people. People will
of
be
course.
Planning weddings now.
Well, not only that, I have been invited to a wedding in March of next year by a very, very dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Who happens to be a member of the Uniting Church, who is incredibly proud that their church have actually got this possibility now and wants to be there to celebrate her marriage, their marriage, in their church. Now, that now is at risk.
So, basically, we've been investigating this. We've got the letter. It hasn't actually, so I suppose we're breaking the story that the Uniting Church are potentially, not guaranteed they are, but potentially, and it looks like it, they're going to revisit this decision to whether or not they continue to do same-sex marriages.
Mm, correct.
Are you publishing this on your website?
We will. It will go up. It will go up with our podcast, but we're giving you a copy.
Thank you.
Because I think it's, you know, it deserves a...
Please do. As I said, I'm going straight to the office from here, so I will drop it off.
Great.
Lovely.
It's really quite serious. Now, it flows in nicely. During the week, Matthew Guy, or last week, he addressed a gathering, or a brethren, I'm not sure the right word, of the Australian Christian Lobby.
Mm-hmm.
Where,
tried to do it secretly.
Yeah, and only...
I think Henrietta Cook had the story.
Yeah, so Henrietta wrote the story. He wasn't going to make a policy announcement, I understand. He said to the Australian Christian Lobby that, you know, he intends to reintroduce the availability of religious instruction, is it,
mm-hmm.
in schools. So why, Mark, why?
I think we all know why, and the why is something that we at The Age have been reporting on quite extensively for the past few years, and that is that there has been a creeping or growing religious, conservative religious faction within the Liberal Party.
I thought you were going to say a religious fatwa.
No, religious faction. It does have a great deal of power. It's not mm-hmm. controlling, but it does have a great deal of power within the party. There have been a strong membership drive.
Well, it is a broad church.
Some call it branch stacking, others don't, but that accusation has been made not by us but within the Liberal Party. And I would suggest that Matthew, and there's a very good feature from Farah Thomason in today's
yes.
paper, is a Christian. Not condemning that at all. I went to a Catholic school myself. But appeasing that faction within the party, which has quite a bit of power, is important. And it's this balancing act. I personally think, in terms of this election, Matthew's dead man walking. I cannot see him winning at all. And I think the push will be on for the leadership post this election pretty quickly.
Who?
I think Pesutto will get it. But again, he'll have a battle because he's a far more moderate in terms of his beliefs. I think you'll probably have people such as Tim Smith, who from member for Q, I think.
When, yes. when he's not selling Lamingtons for Georgina Downer.
Who is...
And declining our interviews.
Yeah. Young man and quite a conservative man. Probably has that conservative faction behind him. But I think, given the numbers, I think it's going to be very difficult for Matthew to win. And I think 8 years in opposition is a very hard thing
to do.
It's
a long time.
That's a big call, Mark.
Yeah, it is a big call.
Mm.
It's my view. It's not the Age's view.
I understand that.
I think Labor will win with a slightly reduced majority. They'll probably lose a seat or two, probably just one in the inner city, one or two in that southeast corridor.
Of course, by next Friday, the Liberals will announce whether or not they're going to run candidates in some of those inner city seats, one of them being Richmond,
mm-hmm.
which Dick Wynne, the Minister for Planning, and he's actually on in the second hour. If they don't run a candidate in Richmond, based on last election's results, the Greens would have that seat.
Yes.
So if they choose not to run a Liberal candidate in Richmond, potentially they're saying they'd rather have a Greens Member of Parliament than a Labor Member of Parliament, which is really a really quite... considering they don't love Labor, but they hate the Greens.
It's a very cynical world, politics.
Isn't it?
But also, Macca, they're not giving their own constituents a choice.
And as Dean Smith said in Perth,
if I were a Conservative voter...
Yeah, where do you go?
Where do I go? What do I do?
Don't forget, this is a fairly cash-strapped party at the moment too. They can't fight...
They just got a big chunk of money.
They just got some money from the Cormac Foundation. Michael Kroger, actually on this program, we suggested that they donate the building to Joy. That would be a big tax deduction. We'd give them free tenancy. But they've now got... because they've got their building was
correct
for sale. I think, have they taken it out off sale?
I haven't kept an eye on that.
But they've got some money from the Cormac Foundation, a deal that was brokered by Josh Frydenberg mainly, and requires an undertaking of no further legal action against Cormac. And they've given some money. But, yeah, it's a bit late in the campaign to be getting that money. You know,
yes and no. From what I've told, and this is something I've been asking about for this campaign, it's never actually too late. That printing and billboards and mobile billboards cost money and are effective right up to the last days.
So you think it's... if you were a betting man personally...
Which I am.
You are. would you be putting money on the Libs winning?
State election?
Mm.
You'd have to give me some... Extraordinary odds. Yes, yes. I think some of my racehorses are a better chance of winning.
Yeah. So, other thing, banking Royal Commission.
Yes.
We've seen a lot of fallout from that.
Extraordinary fallout. pardon me. I was actually business editor working with Adele Ferguson when we commissioned some of the first stories into Commonwealth Bank. Kind of in the past 10 years lived and breathed this story on the newsroom floor of The Age, and some of the revelations that have come out in that Royal Commission have astonished us.
It's actually, it goes beyond bastardry. It's theft, it's fraud. But you know one thing that surprised me? Of all the bank CEOs, so Hartzer from Westpac sounds to me like... You know, he's come off Star Trek, out of a time capsule. Doesn't acknowledge really anything's gone wrong. Shayne Elliott from ANZ sort of apologised, but, you know, hasn't really. Matt Common from the Commonwealth Bank, well, nothing to see here. The one that's actually impressed is Andrew Thorburn from the NAB, who I think... First off, they held their interest rate, their housing loan interest rate, when the others put them up a little bit. But his apology and his acknowledgement of the problem and saying, this is how many people we've sacked, I thought that was a really good start amongst the big four banks. You know, the others really didn't impress me with what they said.
So I've met Andrew multiple times. We actually spoke several times during our reporting. I can't say what we... discussed because that, you know, they were confidential discussions. But I can say this, I do find him to be a thoroughly decent person. Mm. And I believe I've seen his apologies, I've seen the social media posts he's put out, and having met him multiple times, I believe they're genuine.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, that's the start of a process. But, you know, this has got a long way to go. We've seen bank profits affected by it. We've seen dividends mostly...
Get bank profits. You wouldn't want to be an AMP shareholder right now.
Well, no. I mean, that joint's rooted.
Macca, we do need to wind up.
Do we?
But, one of our regular listeners, who happens to be one of your fans, Mark, has made a comment about something to do with a Beatles album. They obviously listen to you very regularly on John Fain as well.
No, I'm not on John Fain. No, I've actually never been on John Fain's show. I think Tim Smith...
Oh, they're referring to Tim Smith.
I know that Tim Smith is regularly on Fain.
Oh, see, it's too
close.
Why
aren't you on John Fain?
Yeah, why aren't you?
Are you not angry enough for him?
I've never been invited.
Oh.
Invite yourself.
I can't do that.
you are always welcome here.
In fact, it's great. As you know, Mac, I have two young children, which is why I haven't been in this studio for a long time. And I'm normally in a highly chlorinated swimming pool trying to teach one to swim at this time. But it's great to be back.
And I thanked you earlier when we previewed the show. And, you know, I wanted to say thank you to your lovely wife for giving you a leave pass today. Because actually, last time you were in here, I think, was this day last year.
It was.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So we, you know, Neil Mitchell.
You're not the one who has to say thank you for the leave pass, Mac. No.
So thank you, Mark's wife. Thank you.
Bronwyn.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. Macca, Tass and Mark Hawthorne. Mark is the Victorian publisher of The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald and the Financial Review. Am I right that the Sydney Morning Herald is the biggest news site in Australia?
Combined print and digital, yes. I think somewhere in the vicinity of 12.5 million Australians a month come to us for news.
Wow.
Across The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald and the Financial Review. And there have been times, we don't jump up and down about it, but when you combine The Age's digital and print circulation on a daily basis, that we're bigger than the Herald Sun. So there are quite, to be honest, that's a pretty accurate statement now in terms of Melburnians going to their news. They tend to come to us, especially with big breaking news.
Yeah, cool.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it is. It would be the first time in 30 years we've been able to say that. But we've done a very good job on the digital site. We've done a very good job on print. So I think a couple of years ago when I came in here, we were talking about the future of print journalism. Mm. And I was probably only giving you a two-year window at that point. And now with some changes within the business, and we are actually doing a bit of sharing of distribution with News Corp.
Yeah.
I can confidently give a 3 to 5 year window for 7 day print from now. So it's really good. There's multiple factors in that, everything from the Trump factor, which has brought people around the world back to old-fashioned trusted news sources.
There you go.
Young people, I'm talking to a lot of school principals who tell me that 2 years ago kids just believed what was in their social media feed. Now they might read it and go, oh, I'll just check that on the ABC or check that with The Age before I believe it. Those little cultural things are really good. And again,
That obviously puts the pressure on.
A bit of nostalgia for the papers.
It increases the pressure, though, to get it right.
Oh, always. Hmm. And now, we don't always get it right.
Hmm. Hmm.
Now, recently you did a bit of a tour. So you visited a number of newspapers around the world to get a feel,
where the industry's going, what some of our peers are doing.
And their digital. What were some of the titles you visited?
So those who are tech savvy and media savvy have probably heard of the Google News Initiative. So yes. Google's global partnership with a number of media groups around the world to help support news. So Fairfax, the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age were the beta test for that. We were the first body. Now it's the FT, quite a number of major news organisations. So I spent some time at Google. Yes, they do have a beach volleyball court. Yes, they do have a slippery slide in their reception. Yes, they do have free bicycles to get around with. But they also, in terms of my business, have some of the smartest people in the world. So I met Jim Albright, who's their vice president for global subscription. I met the founder of Salon, who's a vice president of Google. And we spoke about the future of digital subscription. I spent some time with the San Francisco Chronicle editor. I spent some time with the Wall Street Journal. Very interesting trip. Yeah.
So, again, these are... And the Wall Street Journal...
Is Murdoch-owned.
Is Murdoch-owned, yet it's actually a journal of note. How's that happened?
We've had... You and I've had this discussion. As I've said, I've worked for the Murdoch papers in the past. And, Fairfax isn't the only place in the world people can get their journalism.
No.
There are different standards. There are some news organisations that do it better than others. I think our editorial charter of independence and the culture that exists within our newsroom make it a pretty special place and somewhere I haven't encountered. But there are many days I pick up the Herald Sun or the Australian and say, gee, I wish I had that story.
Right.
Hmm. We actually have a question for you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Sky News and the recent sacking of Ross Cameron over his racist comments?
Don't watch Sky News. Oh, actually, I lie. I watch Sky News before the sun goes down. And yes. I think something before Halloweenish happens when the sun goes down. It's not journalism.
I don't watch Sky News either.
No.
Never have.
I read Mr. Cameron's comments, and I think his departure and his sacking are appropriate.
I mean, he's banned from membership of the Liberal Party for 5 years because he attacked GLAD.
Mm-hmm.
Gladys, you mean?
Well, everyone calls her Gladys.
Gladys Berejiklian.
Yeah. But someone did tweet, oh, isn't this interesting? You know, the sacking of someone we've never heard on a program no one watches. On Sky, that's true. It has very, in terms of the pay TV component, quite small. You know, more people live in Warragul than watch Sky News.
So it's not all about numbers, Macca, and this is very important. So the Financial Review, Australian Financial Review doesn't have anywhere near the eyeballs on it on any given day.
No, but it's on the people's desks who matter.
Yes. The CEOs of the country, yeah. People who actually have a great deal of power, it is their newspaper of choice. The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald in print don't have the same distribution as the Telegraph or the Herald Sun. But we have a fairly influential, affluent, well-educated readership, and people who probably get involved in social issues and political discourse a little bit more. Not, I'm saying a lot more, a little bit more. Sky News, when I go to Parliament House, is on in all over
every
Parliament
office,
House.
Every office. Yeah.
So in other words, it actually has an impact.
Yeah.
It has a agenda
setting. There's probably a little bit of
navel
gazing within Canberra, but it's probably preaching to the converted.
It's a bit of an echo chamber.
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. Absolutely an echo chamber.
Now, the interesting thing is that a lot of that Sky content is now carried into regional Australia on the Wind Network.
It's also on in Qantas lounges.
Well, I don't fly Qantas.
It's no longer on at the at our railway stations in Melbourne, though.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I don't think it's a bad thing either.
I think we should be supporting
our independent media.
Mm.
You know, which is why we have Mark in, why we exist. You know, we also have The Conversation in.
Have you invited Damon Johnson from the Herald Sun?
No.
No, we must do that sometime.
To be fair,
let's do it.
Would he come in?
It's not my decision to make. I've met him. He's a decent fella.
You know who I'd like? I'd like their national political commentator, Mr. Campbell.
James?
Yeah.
You can invite him.
He looks a bit like...
I
always thought the guy that used to head Sky, Kim...
Well, they wear similar glasses.
Yeah, Gough Whitlam's son-in-law.
They wear similar glasses.
Yeah,
that would be about it.
Yeah, no, they look very similar. They look to me like it was a double order.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.